Chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I am thrilled to have Kyle McClellan on the show today. Kyle is a former pitcher for the St. Louis Cardinals and is the founder and president of Brace for Impact 46. Well, Kyle, thank you so much for being on the show today. I am so excited about our conversation. You and I have had a chance to visit, and there's just so many awesome things that you're doing right now that I want our listeners to hear about. So thank you for being here.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's just jump right into it. You know, I think people know you as a Cardinals pitcher, and then I think you went to the Texas Rangers for a while, and I want to talk about that. But let's back up a little bit because people may not know how you grew up. And I know you're a St. Louisan through and through, right? So talk to us a little bit about how you grew up.
Yeah, so I grew up right here in St. Louis. I grew up in Hazelwood. I went to Hazelwood West High School, the big question. Grew up in a great family, had great parents, great brother and sister, had one each. And, you know, I grew up playing ball. That's what we did in our family. If it wasn't me, it was my brother or sister at a game, you know, and I was the bat boy or running around. And so sports is always a huge part of my life, you know, but it was something that I really started to excel at kind of in that junior high, high school timeframe. Had a chance to get a scholarship at University of Missouri my senior year. And then shortly after that, started getting attention from professional teams. And I was 17 years old and just finished high school and then was drafted by the Cardinals. So my parents and I had to make that decision of, as a 17-year-old kid, do you go to college? Do you go and sign professionally? And ultimately, we decided that we thought the best path was to sign with the Cardinals for development reasons. And off I was. As I was 18 at that time, by the time I signed, and off into the real world with expectation, all the things that go with it.
Right. Well, I know that I've read a little bit about you, and you were a three-sport athlete, right? So yep. You play basketball and baseball and what else?
And football.
Yep. Yeah. So anything with a ball in it.
I have two kids now. I have a 9 and 7-year-old, and we're to that point, you know, youth sports is so different now than it was. And I honestly hate where it is. Every sport is so obsessive with year round. I mean, soccer's year round, baseball's year round, you know, that coaches in sports, they don't want their players playing other sports because they feel like they're going to be behind. They need to do their training. And it's a struggle. I mean, my wife and I talk about it all the time. You know, how do we balance this and the family life and sports? And, you know, if you commit to a team, you want to be there for them, but man, it's out of hand. We're thick in it right now with my daughter who does select soccer, club soccer, and then also plays feeder basketball. So it's a competition for her time all the time. And it's really a struggle. You know, when I was growing up, it was you played football during the fall. And then when that was over, you put your ball and your spikes away until the next fall. And then you played basketball. And then when that was over, you know, then you got the baseball spikes out. But now it's different. It's tough being in the parent situation, knowing better, but knowing also that that's just the way things are right now. And it's a struggle to find that balance for sure. And it's unfortunate for the kids because they're making them have it a pick early. You know, like you said, I was a three-sport athlete, able to do that all the way through high school. If I ended up just doing baseball my senior year, but kids aren't going to be able to do that. They're going to have to pick at the age of 9, 10, what they want to do. And unfortunately, you don't know at that point what you're good at.
Yeah, you have, and you don't even know really which one you're going to enjoy the most. So
and each sport develops other, so many skill sets. Basketball taught me so many things that baseball would have never taught me. Football taught me so many things that basketball and baseball would have never taught me. Baseball, I was always good at. Basketball and football, I had to work my butt off to compete and to be a good player. And so I learned so much through all those other sports. And that's why, you know, I want my kids playing multiple sports. But it's definitely a lot tougher now than it was 20 years ago.
Yeah, it's tough on many fronts right now. So I know you have your 9-year-old little girl, Olivia, and then your little almost 7-year-old.
Yep.
Let's talk a little bit about your Cardinals experience. And I know that was just an amazing experience for you. So you were drafted, it was 2002?
Drafted in 2002. And then I spent 6 years in the minor leagues. Two of those were in rehab with two elbow surgeries. And, you know, I had a lot of ups and downs in the minor leagues. It's a tough road, especially as a high school kid. If you look at the percentages of the guys in the major leagues, high school versus college, I don't know the number, but I would tell you it's overwhelmingly college players over high school. And then if you take out the high school players that are the first pick of that draft, I would say that percentage drops even more to so many more college kids because there's just so many things that can happen and so much development that does need to happen that it's a tough road for high school kids. And I struggled, you know, I had an injury and sat out for 2 years. And when I came back, I just kind of matured mentally, understood what I had, kind of the opportunity I had in front of me. And when I came back, I had a very short window coming off the injury before they release you. I just happened to make the most of it and fell in the right situation and did well. And the next year I found myself in the major leagues and coming out of spring training and spent 5 years. I never went back down to the minor leagues. I was up for 5 straight years, was a part of the 2011 World Series team. You know, it was just great memories that to be able to play here in my hometown in front of my friends and family all the time was great. I always say it has its negatives too, because if you had a bad game, everybody was watching. You know, like if I was in San Diego or Seattle and had a bad game, nobody would know. But here, like you have a bad game and I still hear about it. Like, I remember that game you threw. I'm like, well, I threw some good ones too in there, you know, but they don't miss anything here. And so that has its pluses and its negatives to it. But it was as good as you could have asked for an experience for my family here, for my wife. I mean, the city has just been so great to us through our whole career. And even now post-career, just supported us all the way through and got to be a part of some amazing teams and meet some people that really had some huge influences in my life as well. So I think I just was placed in that situation for a reason.
Absolutely. Yeah. To be able to play for your home team, that is a dream come true. But I also know, Kyle, that you developed some amazing friendships.
Yeah.
One of those was with Adam Wainwright. And I really want to dive into this because there's so much that I want to talk about here. But you ended up retiring. You retired in 2014. Mm-hmm. And then that very same year, you and Bridget took a trip with the Wainwrights to Haiti.
Yep.
And that trip was a pivot point for you to set you up for what you're doing now. So tell us about that trip and, you know, what even inspired you to go?
Yeah, you kind of need to rewind. So when I was playing here, Bridget and I were looking for an opportunity to get involved financially in something, and we couldn't find it. We looked for 3 years and we couldn't find our right fit. And in the meantime, we had put money aside in a giving account that we were just waiting to kind of use. And I continued to go down some roads and it just doors were getting closed. And Adam was a great friend of mine, a mentor of mine, a tremendous leader, and had a huge influence on my life. And I would say on my wife's life as well, between, you know, him and Jenny as a great team to us. And I reached out to him and I said, Adam, you're doing some amazing things all over the world. You know, what are some things that we can get involved in? And he mentioned some things and it just wasn't for me. It was, I'm very type A, I'm very hands-on. And I didn't want to just put my name on something and have somebody else just kind of take it and run with it. I wanted to be involved in it. Thankfully, we didn't have anything from a family standpoint that really grabbed our heart or really, you know, we were able to get behind as a lot of people are drawn into things because of, you know, family situations. And so we were just like, man, what is it that we need to do? And so 3 years went by. I'm with the Texas Rangers. I call Adam at the end of that year. I just had surgery on my shoulder. So injuries is what led to the early retirement. I was 28 years old. I had 6 arm surgeries and I just came off a tough year with the Rangers where I spent time in the minor leagues. I had a surgery. I knew I had a long road ahead of me. And I called Adam and I said, Adam, the parable of talent is just weighing on me right now. We've essentially buried our treasure. So we have put this money in a giving account and nobody is growing in their faith because of our finances. And we have to get rid of this money. He mentioned some things and he said, I tell you what, we're going to Haiti in 3 weeks. Why don't you go with us? And I was like, I'm in. I've always wanted to do something like this. to be honest with you, I always use baseball as a crutch not to go because, you know, I was preparing for spring training. I can't be in a third world country. What if I get sick? What if I throw that day? I can't lift that day. You know, I'm going to be behind. And a lot of that's true, but it's also a crutch to not, you know, go and put yourself in that situation. And so my wife, I talked to her about it. And next thing we know, 3 weeks later, we're on a plane to Haiti. And I'll be honest, I didn't know the first thing about Haiti. I just knew we were going with some friends of ours to see some stuff that they had been involved with. Adam's financial advisor is a Christian financial advisor. And he says, look, you're going to write the check because that's needed, but you're going to follow that check as well, because that's what's going to change you. And so we're not just going to write checks to places and never go see it, because seeing it is what truly changes us. And we have a responsibility of our finances to make sure that those funds are, your giving should be looked at just like a business. And if you run a business, like, you want the most return for the kingdom that you can on those finances, and you're responsible for that. So we were on that trip to see if the money that they had put into this children's home was something they wanted to continue to invest in, or if it just wasn't quite what they were hoping and move on to something else. We got down there, and Bridget and I didn't know in that 3 years. I couldn't tell you what we were looking for. I couldn't tell you the project we wanted or what it looked like, but when we saw it, we knew it. And when we got down there, we were like, this is where we need to be. And a lot of things were there. We didn't really know, but as we started going, we're like, this is what we were holding out for. We have a leadership team in place. So I don't want to do the day-to-day grind of making all the decisions. Mm-hmm. We already had people in place for that. What they needed was, they needed funding. And what our strength was funding. That was where we said, hey, we have some funding in place, but let's create this organization and make this thing last longer. The funny part and the ironic part about this trip is that purposely, I'll be dead honest, I didn't want to do international. Like, I wanted to be in St. Louis. I'm born in St. Louis. I'm raised in St. Louis. St. Louis supported me throughout my entire career, and I wanted to support St. Louis back through that. And so international wasn't where I thought that we would end up. And what I quickly learned was that there was some selfish intent into that, that maybe I didn't know at the time, but I think deep down inside, there were some selfish desires of like, this is going to build my name in the community. There's some selfish stuff to it. But what I also realize is how big the kingdom is on that trip in Haiti. And what I realize is God loves those kids in Haiti just as much as he loves my kids. And that changed my life. Because before that, I would tell you that my kids were more important. The people in my bubble, the people in my city, my interaction, they're more important. But God doesn't see it that way. God sees it as, I don't see city and county and state and country lines. I see everybody as one. And their people. And that was a perspective I didn't have until we got out of our comfort zone, went over there, and it completely changed our life and the trajectory of my wife and I's relationship, our faith, and our organization that was created after that, because our eyes were open to so much more. But more so, what I also saw over time was that we had the heart and we had the passion, but we didn't have the training. And so what God was saying is, I love your heart. You're going to do some great things, but you're not ready. If you come to St. Louis and start here, you're going to fail. Because my mindset would have been, this is what you're doing, this is how you're going to do it, and this is what it looks like. And what we learned in Haiti is the value of local leadership and how to play your role and not come in and say, this is what's going to happen, because you don't know. And I tell all the time, everybody listen to this, we can all jump on a plane and head to Haiti right now, and you can all give me ideas of what you think need to be done, and they will all be good ideas.
This is why it's going to be done, right?
Because we don't live there. We don't live it every day. Mm-hmm. We don't know what happens in those communities. And so you need to have that local leadership and trust. And that's what was found in Haiti. And that's why, you know, I think we've been so successful.
I love it. And I know you've got stories, and I want to jump into those, Kyle, but we're going to take a quick break and then we'll be right back with Kyle.
Are you a rising IT leader? Could you benefit from a network of like-minded peers? Let me introduce you to the St. Louis Technology Leadership Experience. This one-of-a-kind program gathers cohorts of IT professionals for three workshops: peer small group problem solving, one-on-one mentoring by IT executives, and multiple networking events. You'll be prepared for your next steps as an IT leader by gaining core leadership competencies and a strong, powerful network of peers. To apply for our next TechLX cohort, visit tpi.co/TLX.
So Kyle, in 2014, you founded your 501c3, Brace for Impact. So tell me, where did that name come from?
When we were going through this and trying to figure out, you know, we were going to start an organization, I kept thinking about our trip. And, you know, anybody that goes on a mission trip for the first time, you think you're going to go down and change the world. You're going to change the country. You're going to do all this good. And so we went down there to have an impact on the kids. What we learned is we weren't braced for the impact that it was going to have on us. And so by being down there and getting out of our bubble and exposing ourselves and putting ourselves in situations that we were uncomfortable in, It really gave us a chance to see things differently, and we weren't braced for that, and it wrecked our world. The 46 was my uniform number, and we had to put that on because when Sully landed the plane in the Hudson, he said brace for impact before he landed. He wrote a book called Brace for Impact. So I don't get sued by Sully. We had to put my uniform number on the end of it. And that's how we came up with the name.
Okay. So you founded your 501c3. What was the first thing you did when you went to Haiti? Talk about the orphanage and then we'll move into some other things.
So really, I mean, the first thing we did is we asked what's needed, what's next. And our leadership team down there, these are six kids that grew up in an orphanage together that our partner over 30 years ago went down and met on his first trip. And the leader, Remy, who's our head visionary, he grabbed Brad and pulled him aside and said, 30 years ago, God's given me a vision to do what people have done for us. And I think you're here to help. And over time, Brad continued to go down there and build relationships. And so when I talk about jumping in and plugging into a leadership team, these are people that are trusted. Brad has known these kids since they were, you know, waist high in an orphanage. These are essentially his kids. I mean, his relationship with them is so great. And they're our leadership team. So they now sit on the board. All of the things that we've done down there is done under their name and their entity. So it's theirs. You know, this is a Haitian-led community project. So we sat down with them and they said, we need to expand our children's home. We have 32 kids. We would like to expand it. And so that was what we did. We came back. I ran a half marathon and we tried to raise money. And it took us 19 months, but we raised the $212,750 to do it. And that was our first step was we built the second level of the orphanage. And originally, my thought was we were going to do this here, and then we were going to go to Honduras and Africa and Guatemala and all these impoverished countries, and we were going to, you know, change the world. And I was sitting on the balcony with my wife on one of our trips after the orphanage had been built. And I looked at her and I said, we can't leave here. And she said, oh God, no, we can't leave here. And what I learned was it's not just building the building, but it's doing it and then surrounding them with the resources they need to be successful. And yes. So if we did that and left, we would really be creating a big void and a burden on that community to be able to continue the funding of that. So we committed essentially for as long as we could see in the future to the funding of whatever was needed at that orphanage to take care of those kids as an organization. And then it just grew from there. Our partners stepped up as well. Adam and Jenny got excited after that trip and caught the vision, knew that we were in great hands there. And so we've built a school together as a group. We have 300 kids from the community that get to go to our school now. We have a feeding program that Brace for Impact started. And we feed the kids every day a hot, nutritious meal that we hire women to cook there from the community. And then on weekends, we lose contact with the kids. And we were finding out through a survey that on Mondays was their worst day. And we found out that they weren't eating on the weekends. And so we give them backpack meals that we pack here in St. Louis as a part of a volunteer program we do. And we ship the meals down there. And then on weekends, each kid gets two backpack meals to take home so that they can be fed and energized and their brains and bodies can develop and be ready to take in that education on Monday. We have a hospital that a kid that grew up in our orphanage, our kind of original orphanage that's about 20 minutes away from ours now, where all this kind of stemmed from. Brilliant mind, wanted to be a doctor, and went to medical school 7 years in Port-au-Prince and became a doctor. And Adam and Jenny have built this hospital that sees over 1,000 people a month. There's a ton of jobs created from the nurses and doctors and everybody that's associated with it. All hired, all Haitians. We do take little strike teams, I call them, on the medical side to help empower and educate the team, but we don't get in the way of seeing patients and telling them what to do. We just try to help train and educate, do seminars specific to the things that they need. We really focus on OB. Infant fatality is 38% in this community, and we think with training and education, we can get that down into single digits. And so that's really been a focus of ours. Our first year, we had 117 babies born and no fatalities. So we've really put a dent into the infant fatality percentages there. And then we have water and sanitation. So 40,000 people a day have clean drinking water through our 9 water filtration systems and 1,100 toilets that we've put in the community at homes, little outhouses in these homes. The last thing we did was a vocational school that we were just getting ready to open before COVID hit. And so we've kind of paused on that a little bit while we're kind of getting things in order. But that's kind of that next step for that transition for these kids when they come out of the orphanage and the school, giving them a skill set to be successful in a local environment, not just giving them an education and then turning them loose, but then giving them that training for job specific things there in the community. So that's all happened in 2014. I had to go down there 5 or 6 times a year, you know, lead groups down there and trips. And, you know, it's been life changing. But what it also helped us do is 2 years into that, Bridget and I sat down and we said, we have to come back to St. Louis. There is a need here locally. And I love what we're doing there, but we have to have a local component to this. And so we came back and quietly started looking. We're a really good partner. We fundraise for you. So everybody wants us to be their partner. So we quietly started looking and got connected to someone that's very connected to the inner city. And I said, the city is where I want to go. As I look at our city as a whole, I just feel like there's a need there. And I'm not afraid of tough areas. In Haiti, we chose Haiti. It's knowing it's one of the toughest places to do ministry. So we're okay with that. So we found an amazing partner. His name's Andre Alexander at the Tabernacle Community Development Corporation. And my wife and I sat down with Andre and said, we were connected by a mutual friend. So we had, you know, a lot of respect for him going into it. Essentially said, I'm not going to tell you anything about us or what we're looking for, but I want to hear your plan. And he just rattled things off. And my wife and I actually had a checklist going into this, like, okay, what are some of the things that we've seen successful that are going to carry over? And it was like, we gave him the answer sheet. He was just like checking everything off and just a brilliant mind and amazing heart and a tremendous leader. We said, this is our guy. This is what we need to do. So we started a partnership with him to fund his vision. Again, this is his vision, not ours, and his program. And what we do is help him and his organization buy and renovate homes in a very targeted area that surrounds his church so that he's the center point of that. They're renovated by all local contractors, so we don't do any volunteer work. It's more expensive, but it's also the way that we get to support the community. So what we do is we hire about probably 50 to 60 people per every job, but we also hired a 77% minority rate. So what we're doing is saying, this is your community and we want you to be a part of that transformation. We learned that in Haiti. Again, like I said, instead of us coming down and telling them what to do and taking the jobs from them, we're now coming down and creating those jobs. And what you see is the stories have been tremendous. I could share all day on the stories that have come out of this. And from the worker standpoint, from the community standpoint, from people that aren't even benefiting directly from the program, but that are all in on the program and take care of it and take ownership of it because it's truly been theirs to create. And then once the homes are done, and these are homes that were built, our last home I think was built in 1896, we restore it to its original beauty. And then families are placed into these homes and these families are placed in through a long interview process. And we're looking for the families that truly want change for their kids. The only requirement is you have to have kids. That's who we want to make the difference on.
Yes.
They get in there, they pay rent. It's a discounted rent, but they pay rent based on what they can afford. And then they have a few commitments they have to make. So we say, we'll come halfway, you come the other half. We're not going to give you anything. You're going to have to put some sweat equity in here because this is how you're going to change. So they have to volunteer in the community 2 to 4 hours a month as a family. And then they have to meet with our community coordinator that's been placed with them. Every family's placed with the community coordinator that is in constant contact with them and writes a program specifically for their family, not a blanket approach that we're forcing upon them, but finding out what their needs are and then addressing those needs through all the resources and nonprofits and things that are around that we have access to. So it's been, you know, amazing. We have 6 houses that have been completed through Tabernacle Development Community Corporation. Most of these are duplexes, so you're getting 2 families in each one, and it's been tremendous. So again, it's supporting the people in the local community, elevating their platform. It's not about Brace for Impact, and we're not looking for the credit. We're not plastering our name over. I mean, in North St. Louis, we're very isolated. We don't talk about it as much because it's taken us so long to build trust and relationship. We wanted to do that through our partner and not through us.
Oh, I love that you're involving the community. I love that. I mean, you're lifting up the whole community, Kyle, by what you're doing, you know, giving the local contractors jobs. It's incredible. You call that whole area the village.
Our partner, when he gave us, so one of the things I said to him, I said, I need to know that you have a plan and not a vision. I can't invest in a vision because visions, they change, right? And I can't take our donors' money and invest in things that aren't ready to go. And he said, well, great, here's my business plan. He had this business plan and it was the village, and that's what he called it. And really what we're trying to create is, you know, it takes a village. And that's really what we're trying to create is create an environment where these people have support all around. And there's some other things that he's doing in the community through a hub project that's ongoing right now that's going to bring in a lot of nonprofits. There's going to be a healthcare provider in there for medical services for the people in the community. I mean, there's some amazing stuff that's happening, and that's what we wanted to be. The one thing I know is I'm not an expert in a lot of things, and I don't want to be, and I don't want to pretend to be. So what we want to do is we want to take our lane and we want to do what that is. And then we want to bring in the people that are experts in these other areas, and they can say, hey, here's an area that's becoming a thriving area, an area that's worth investing in. And if our partner thinks they're a worthy partner as well and have the best interest of the people in the community, and they have that expertise in this area, then let's bring them in and let's let them go. We're going to dilute ourselves if we try to spread ourselves out and cover everything. And so let's focus on supporting the housing piece. And then let's bring in other people that are really good at other things that are going to be great partners. It's the same thing in Haiti. we can just go and spend our money on building all these buildings, but it's not going to do anything. Like, let's find our lane in what we do. And we've brought in Baylor University to help us with engineering down in Haiti. We've brought in a tremendous medical staff, Mission 318 and Mercy doctors and nurses that have helped us and taken over our hospital training and education. I don't know anything about medical. I have access to amazing people that can play those roles and do the education side of this. And SLU School of Education, we partner with to help empower and train our teachers so that we can get the most out of our teachers that we have. And that's going to trickle down to the education of our students. So that's really a strength of ours. Find the right people that you can plug in, but it has to be the right partner. We've walked away from partnerships that just weren't
right.
They weren't catching the vision. Yeah. You can tell they were going to be difficult to work with. But people that truly say, this is your project, you guide us, but here's the things that we can bring to the table. And that's a huge way of how we've had strength.
Yeah. And there may be somebody listening now that says, I've got a strength, you know, so we'll talk to you about how you can get involved. So I want to talk about Tricia Zimmer Ferguson is a good friend of mine, and her family owns Caldi's. And I know that you've got a new initiative. You're calling it Brew for Impact. So tell us about that, because you're also engaging the local coffee farmer.
Yeah. So Brett Iselson, who runs Caldi's, I don't know what his job title is, but he does, you know, he's like right underneath the owners there. He was going to Haiti with us and reached out beforehand and said, hey, Haiti used to be a massive coffee producer to the world. I think there's a way we can do something on this trip. Can we go do some coffee stuff? And it just didn't work out. And I said, you need to go first. You need to see it. Because to get to the coffee farms, by the way, is like 16 hours on these roads. And I ain't driving on those roads. So we'll have to do a separate trip. But we looked into it a little bit. And then he got there and kind of got to see it and understand it. And he got back and this was kind of his thing. He said, Caldi's wants to and can support you. But instead of just like, you know, sponsoring an event here and there, like we can create something for you that can be long term. And so he had a buddy of his that was already sourcing coffee from Haiti out of Philadelphia. And he reached out to him and he said, hey, here's this farmer that I use, this company. They've been in business for over 100 years, family farm in southern Haiti. We got the samples from him and Brett called me in. He said, this coffee is amazing. So we bring those beans and we ended up buying a pallet. So it supports the local farmers. It's a co-op there. So farmers from all over the southern part of Haiti are bringing their beans in. They land here in St. Louis. Caldi's takes them. They roast them. They created the bag for us. And then we essentially sell it out of my basement. It's on our website. And then we ship it out of here. And we have a subscription. So for every 3 months, you select the amount of bags you want. It's the cheapest price on that. And then we just drop ship it to you every 3 months. And the impact that the coffee has, one, it's really good coffee. So we just thought this is a great way because everybody's drinking coffee. But secondly, all the money we make on this goes to sending our kids to school in Haiti. So for every 24 bags of coffee we sell, sends one kid to school for an entire year, provides an education for an entire year. You're drinking coffee every morning anyway. Why not drink coffee that's going to go and help change a community and change a child's life and a family's life? We launched that a year ago. And we are really trying to grow that as we see this as really a long-term success. Coffee's not going anywhere. And we just think this is really a long-term success for the organization, how we can create some stability of funding for our school. And we hope that this can carry over. We want to keep it in Haiti because it's originated in Haiti. And we want to keep it there. We, in the future, see this as taking over and also being able to affect St. Louis once we grow this thing to where we can.
Yeah, it's a sustainable model.
Yep.
So you're already drinking coffee, people. So you might as well drink
some that has an impact.
Yes, for sure. So Kyle, this is called Something Extra. I believe, and I know you believe this too, every person is gifted with unique abilities and talents and skills. But what do you believe is the something extra that every leader needs, in your opinion?
I've played with some amazing leaders, played for amazing managers that have tremendous leadership skills. I feel like running a nonprofit, running a business, if you're a great leader, it's interchangeable. So I feel like if you can run a nonprofit at a high level, you can go jump into one of the biggest businesses and run it. It's all about adapting. It's all the same. It's the way you treat people. It's the way you get the most out of your employees and workers that are going to make you successful. And if you're that successful, you're going to be able to learn the industry that you're jumping into. So I think it's very interchangeable. Successful people are going to be successful wherever you put them. And that comes in sports, that comes in business and all those things. For me, I think it's the ability to know your strengths and weaknesses and be aware of that. I think a lot of leaders that fail are people that think that they're experts in every area and try to convince people of that. And it's their biggest downfall. And everybody sees it. It's so obvious that it's not a strength of yours. The great leaders surround themselves with people that have strengths in the areas that they don't and are okay with letting go and allowing those people to grow. And as an organization, I would say that's our success. You know, as I mentioned, we know what our strengths are and we go from there. From baseball, I'll tell you that the reason I made it to the major leagues and the reason that I was able to stick is because I found out what made me successful and I perfected that. So I knew exactly where and how to throw my fastball. I knew what pitch needed to follow that. I knew how to use my changeup and my curveball off of all of those pitches and what location it needed to be in. I learned that through the struggle of the minor leagues. But what got me to the big leagues and then what ultimately got me to stay there is I mastered it and I perfected it to where I could do it in my sleep. I could do it with my eyes closed. And I spent so much time perfecting my craft that I was able to make it. In baseball, you're one of the best in the world if you can make it to that point. So in business, it's the same way. Find out what you're really good at and find ways to use that to be successful. But then whatever you're not good at, it's probably not worth your time to continue to try to develop that versus going and find somebody that has that strength and utilizing them and allowing them to take it and run. Because if you spend your time trying to develop all these different aspects and cover everything, you're not going to be able to do it.
Right. Well, it's a dilution of your focus and your energy, right? If you're trying to be good at everything, you know? And yep. So I think that that is amazing advice. I always say it's self-awareness.
Yeah.
You know, being self-aware of who you are, know who you are, and then have the humility and the vulnerability to say, I need help in this area. I need help in that area, but be the best that you can be at what you're good at.
Yep.
So that is such great advice. So Kyle, I am suspecting there's going to be a lot of people after hearing this that are like, I love what Kyle's doing. I want to get involved. Tell the listeners, if this is resonating with their heart right now and they say, yeah, I've been looking for something to get involved in. How can they get involved? What are the different ways? How would they go about doing that?
Yeah. So if you go to our website, braceforimpact46.com, you can see a lot more information and videos of the things that we get to do. The one struggle we have, we're not a very heavy volunteer organization, and that's a weakness of ours, but it's also something that we're not willing to compromise for the integrity of our project. So the one thing we don't want to do is run people down to Haiti every couple of weeks and create a show that goes along with that. I'm in North City, St. Louis as well. I mean, we're very respectful to that community and our workers and leaders there. We're not a hands-on organization, which I think hurts us in the nonprofit. A lot of people want to get hands-on. We do have a couple volunteer events throughout the year. We have our food packing event. You know, we package 86,000 meals and send to Haiti. So that's a great way to get your kids involved and actually be a part of that, packing the food we're sending down. And then on the financial side, we need funding to continue to buy and renovate these homes and employ these workers and pay the community coordinator to work with these families. And in Haiti, we have a few more creative ways just because of all the programs we have. But we have a sponsor a child program where you can pick one of the children at the orphanage. I would caution you to read through that closely. We're very protective and careful of how we do that. We want to make sure that every child is treated the same. And, you know, we don't point children out that aren't sponsored or that have multiple sponsors. We want to make sure that everybody's loved and cared for in the same way. So, you know, make sure you read through that. And then also, you know, our coffee is a great way and sharing about our coffee. You know, like if you're a coffee drinker, you probably know like 10 other coffee drinkers off the top of your head, and just sharing the fact that, hey, this coffee is making a difference is really a great way. But in this element we're in right now, as all nonprofits are, it's been a tough year and we've had to make some really tough decisions, especially in Haiti, on our budget and how we've had to go about things to make sure that we're here for the long haul and that we're able to support them through not only this short, rough period, but, you know, make it through this in 5 years, still be successful.
Right. That it's going to be sustainable.
It's been a very difficult year, but we're going to make it, we're going to survive it, and we're going to continue to support those even in tough times.
So say the URL one more time for your website, because I'm suspecting that people can go there and buy the coffee.
Yep. It's braceforimpact46.com. And then on there, you'll see the shop icon and you can pull down on that and it will take you to our Shopify, and I'll get the alert on my phone and I'll get to work. I'll write a handwritten note to you and we'll package it up and get it out. Sometimes my kids will write a note to you too. So if it's a little sloppy, don't be mad.
Sure. Yeah. No, I think that's awesome to get your kids engaged in that.
Yeah.
Well, Kyle, this has just been so much fun. It has been a joy for me just to sit and have a conversation with you. And I know that your story, I know everything is going to be so impactful for our listeners. Impact. Use that word, impact.
That's right. That's right. Well, I appreciate the platform and the opportunity to share it.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.